Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our November 6th, 8 board meeting. We on, Kryn?
You are on and the phones are unmuted.
All right, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Kryn, would you call the board members, please? Go ahead.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Pulaski.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes. Mr. Bell.
Here.
Mr. Zick.
Here.
Mr. Drews.
Here.
Ms. Horn.
Thank you. Would you call staff, please?
Roll call. There's always people in the room.
I guess you better do them both.
Yeah. I will combine everybody. As I point to you, please state your name and who you represent loudly and clearly for the record. We'll start here at the table.
Ted Leonard, Ada.
Back in the corner.
Huntington.
Ann Britton, Fairbanks, Natural Gas.
John Bittner, DCGV.
Jeff Van Watts, Ada.
Nick Schnoyan, Ada.
Kevin Tillotson, Wells Fargo.
Ann Metcalf, Alaskan Border Company.
Aaron Floyd, Wells Fargo.
Sue Wolf, Northland Bank.
Hal Lane, Cummings Traction Theaters.
Leona Hakala, Ada.
Kirsten Rodvik, Ada.
Over here.
Tracy Peterson, Ada.
Back row.
Alex Shepard, NEI.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Jim Hensap, Ada.
Alan Johnson, Coordinator of the State Department.
Good morning, the 49th State Angle Fund.
We like Richard.
Gary Judea, Buffalo Law.
Mark, Ada.
Ada.
Cola Bramer, last year with Connor.
Michael Lamb, Ada.
Mark Feynman, Cooking at Housing Consultant of Blood Bank of Alaska.
Bob Scanlon, Blood Bank of Alaska.
Kevin Lewis, Ada.
Ken Vassar, Bond Counsel to Ada.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Green Tempinant, Ada. Back in the corner.
Randy Stenzel, Architect.
Do we have public on the phone? If so, please identify yourself.
Kim, HDR.
Any other public on the phone?
This is Dave Demansky, Rachel Giuliani.
Any other public?
Thank you, Kryn. Next on is our agenda approval. Thank you. Ted?
Yes, Chair. We would like to make several modifications to the agenda. The first modification would be to table item B, which is resolution number G1419. And then we would like to add an executive session on the Endeavor rig. And then also add an executive session to discuss confidential personnel issues.
All right. Could you elaborate on the on item B, tabling that, please?
Yes, Chair. We were requested by the blood bank to table the loan request or the loan application today to allow them more time to work on the loan application, and they are here, Chair, that they were going to speak in public comments to describe what they're needing to do before they come back to Ada with that loan resolution.
All right, Ted. So. On the Endeavor rig and the personnel issue for executive session, can we combine that under the one heading for IEP and those two items?
You bet, Chair.
Okay, so before us the agenda with the proposed changes. Is there any objection to the changes? Is there any objection to the agenda? The agenda is so moved. Thank you. Item 5, prior minutes.
Move to approve September 25th.
Second.
All right. Does anybody have any questions or corrections on the agenda? Gary?
Thank you, Chair. Page 4 of 9, if we would look at paragraph 3 that starts with Mr. Wilkins. In the first line of that paragraph, there's a word called experiential knowledge. If I use that word, I have no idea what it means.
You're not taking the credit?
If somebody asks me what that means, I'm just going to say, I don't know, but I'm the one that said it. So I would just ask that we strike that in the sentence read, Mr. Cox has knowledge of an LNG train.
Hearing no objections, we'll do that. Are there any other corrections or observations or on the minutes for the 25th? Any objections to adopting the minutes? We'll adopt the 25th. Next up, under item number 6 is public comment. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. I will ask in advance if you have questions of the board. I would suggest that you put those in writing and address them to the ADA staff, Ted Leonard, for the appropriate response. The board may have questions of you, which I would encourage. So we'll start. In the room. Is there anybody here who'd like to testify? Public comment. All right. Come on up. Please state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Bob Scanlon. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Blood Bank of Alaska. We appreciate the opportunity to make public comment. We're here today to thank the ADA board for working with us. Up to this point, we've had wonderful service and a wonderful working relationship with folks like Ted and Mr. Jeff San Juan. Wonderful organization. Unfortunately, we've run into a timing issue in regards to procuring written assurance from one of our major donors in order to facilitate the loan. As such, we would request from the board that we table our application until such time as we can reapproach the board for consideration.
Okay.
And I would be more than happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Does anybody have any questions? No questions.
All right.
We appreciate you coming forward and letting us know, and look forward to revisiting the subject in the near future.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Anybody else in the boardroom that would like to make public comment? I don't see anybody. Anybody online? Anybody online that would like to make public comment? All right, and hearing none, I will close the public comment part portion. Brings us up to item number 7, new business. And I'll hand this over to Ted. Ted?
Thank you very much, Chair. Before us, and item A is resolution L1404, and it is approving a loan participation with Northrim regarding a $6 million loan where ADA would take a $4.4 million position, and it's regarding a recreation facility in the Matsu Borough, and
5.4.
Oh, 5.4. What did I say? I'm sorry.
4.4.
Oh. I apologize. Sorry, that was 5.4.
It's $1 million.
Yeah. I haven't drank enough myself here. $1 million and 90% participation in a $6 million loan. And if it's the chair's desire, I would like to bring up Chris to present the loan to the board. And we do also have representatives from the John Stillager trust and company to answer any questions the board may have, and we also have Sue from Northrim here.
All right, we welcome Chris and the group on the loan application.
Thank you. We wanted something positive, Chair, so this is positive.
This is a loan participation, as Ted has indicated. The borrowing entity, co-borrower, is John C. Schweiger Loving Trust and John C. Schweiger. It is for long-term financing for the Valley Family Fund Center. You know where this is, I assume, Crystal. It's a 58,333 square foot proposed retail office structure. It is going to create 35 to 50 new jobs as a result of this project. Mr. Schweiger is known to us and is an experienced owner of 18 theaters. We would be taking a first lien position on the improvements. The property was appraised by Greg Wing at $8.7 million, which gets us a 69% loan to value. From the debt service coverage side of the appraisal, you're at a 1.39:1 if you add back in your vacancy and credit loss for the fact that it's an owner-occupied structure. You're at a 1.48, both of which are above what we consider in underwriting at a minimum of 1.25. There's no environmental issues that we are aware of. We've listed what we think the strengths of the transaction are, and I'll walk through those for the record. There was an independent feasibility study accomplished on this. It does support the viability of the project. As I've indicated, the owner is an experienced owner of AK Theaters, which is an entertainment-related business. It is new construction. In looking at potential alternative uses, this building could be used as a retail office warehouse structure. It does have a strong management team in place. It has a proven history of profitability within the existing business. Its location is right next to the Valley Cinema. Contiguous with. And again, 69% loan to value. There's a strong financial capacity. John is 100% owner in Coming Attraction Theaters. And for this kind of business, there's little to no competition for a Valley Family Entertainment Center. The perceived risk, of course, is the fact that it's a new startup business. You have that risk with these kind of businesses, but we felt that the strengths listed mitigated the fact that it is a startup and the financial background of the borrower. In regards to portfolio diversification, and total dollars in the Natsu region, we would increase from 18% to 27.39%. Total statewide dollars, 21.8% to 23%. And in the Matsu region, as a percentage of Ada's total portfolio dollars statewide, we would increase from 12 to 13%. We did go through Ada's capacity in the revolving fund. Ada's loan funding allocation for fiscal year 15 is $60.85 million. And this outlines, you know, the dollars that have been funded, what's approved to be funded. I'll have to explain that when we did minus out this loan, it was in combination with the proposed blood bank transaction. So actually you would have to add $7 million onto that total, which gives you $35,037,500. So there are sufficient dollars unencumbered to fund this request. As Ted mentioned, Al Lane is here with us. He is the COO for Mr. Schreiber's business, and Sue Wolf, who is the loan officer involved with Northrim. Staff is recommending this participation for approval, and I would then open it up for questions.
Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. Is there any questions from the board? Chris, I just have one, and it's more of a, I guess, from a asset, the relationship between Ada and the co-loan, Northrim, I'm not picking on this particular one, but when you have a bank involved, could you explain how the process works again to the board as far as the loan is presented, the servicing of the loan, two minutes
right.
or less,
right. the
and
mechanics
then,
of it.
Yeah, and then
sure.
and then how the bank that does the additional underwriting, how they exit out of the loan process mm-hmm. after a few years.
Right. The borrower and the the bank has the initial relationship. And the borrower comes to talk to the banker. They give us a pre-flight, which is just a one-page concept base, you know, here's what we're wanting to do, here is why, here are some of the numbers. And we look at that stage to see if there is anything that counters, you know, our regulations or our statutes. And if we have any, you know, flags as to underwriting, we'll say it there too. So there's an initial conversation. At that point, we give the bank hopefully a green light. They start working with the borrower, they get all of the information that they need, they order the appraisal, they get the financials. They underwrite the transaction, and then they go through their approval process, whether that is, you know, loan committee or board, depending on the level. Once it is approved, then they submit a package to us, and we start analyzing it. We independently underwrite. There at that point is usually a conversation that goes back and forth to have questions or answer any issues that come up. And so we independently underwrite. We go through our underwriting process. We go to loan committee and or board. And this is truly a participation. So there's just one set of documents. It's not like having a first and second deed of trust. You have one set of documents. We are buying a participating interest in their loan. And they service the loan for us. And they get a fee out of that rate to service the loan. We also have in our department a servicing area, a servicing person. So we have a counterbalance to their servicing. And we book the transaction that is, you know, the portion.
And how long does it take from the time you get typically getting, you know, after the pre-flight, and they notify you that they have approved their loan under their rules and their, to you getting back to the Northrend,
mm-hmm.
that you've gone through your due diligence and you will fund or participate in a certain whatever percentage of...
Right. In a perfect world, if you get a complete package, and that's always the if, you know, usually about 3 weeks, you know,
okay.
2 to 3 weeks. But what often happens is, unfortunately, you kind of get it piecemeal, and so sometimes that time period is lengthened out a little.
And when you say piecemeal, the underwriting original bank has already gone through it all and approved it. Is there items that Ada asked for that typically the bank would not?
No, I don't.
You know, I don't understand why they.
Yeah.
You know, the difference. Are we would we ask for different items than the bank would have?
No, it's just that sometimes we get a package that doesn't have all the pieces.
Okay.
You know, if they're, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but you know, sometimes the package is submitted and you know the appraisal's on order. You know, you don't have the appraisal, so. You know, it depends. It depends on what is coming to us.
So on average it's 3 weeks, or what
yeah.
would you say the average?
Yeah,
would
I would say 3 weeks. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. To get back to the bank.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Chair, we also have to then try to adjust and work with the banks to ensure that we're meeting the time frame to get it to the board, too. So that can be squeezed really hard. But we do have more time.
Of course, it has to go to our loan committee first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, when you get a pre-flight, do you then, is there any discussion about what information you want prior to the bank?
Sure.
Doing their, I mean,
yeah,
here's a list of the things, and then while you're looking at yours, if you give us this list, this will.
Right. I think most of the lenders, certainly the experienced lenders out there, you know, that we work with, pretty much know what's needed. But yes, there is discussion at that juncture.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One last check. Any questions? All right. Entertain a motion.
Chairman, I'll move resolution number 14-4, approving a loan participation of John Schwieger, Loving Trust, and John C. Schwieger.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
I'm going to pass this around so you know what you're in for. The pictures out of Tennessee. Mr. Spiger has visited many of these.
The rest of the story.
So I'm trying to convince them to have a little get together.
And you'll see at the grand opening.
Yeah, before the grand opening.
You'll see with the
It'll be a great
number. Ben, would you pull the board, please?
That's right. Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski?
Yes.
Ms. Tygart?
Yes.
Commissioner Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so resolution, the next, B has been tabled, so we'll go on to resolution G14-20, Ted.
Yes, Chair, and thank you for item A. Yes, item C is resolution number G14-20, approving Series A and Series B conduit bonds for Alaska Beverage Group to provide financing for improvements to their business. Again, this bond will be in the amount not to exceed $8 million. And again, a conduit bond is one of our tools that we provide. We can provide access to the bond market for businesses in Alaska. And I would request, Chair, if we could bring up our CFO, Michael Lamb, and our bond attorney to go through this bond issuance and answer any questions to the board. Also, Wells Fargo and representatives of the business are here. And just again, as we always state, as we've talked about conduit bonds are not, once issued, are not the liability of ADA, that they are the liability between the borrower and the purchasers of the bonds. And with that, Chair, if I could bring up our CFO and bond attorney.
So I was going to ask the board how many read this.
Well, you can also ask your executive director, Al.
I mean, this is like...
Yes.
So is this in relationship to how much work goes into this, Mike? Is the weight of this...
There is a lot of work that goes into it to protect the board, yes, sir.
And, Chair, just very quickly, every board member who sees these for the first time has the same question. Okay.
Mr. Chair, board members, for the record, Michael Lamb. And as Ted announced, we are very fortunate because it's a big deal, and I think it's Chris had to say on her presentation that this is a great thing. This is one of the things that ADA does to be a conduit, make financing available. And we have Ken Basser, who is actually our bond counsel, and we actually also, of course, Jerry Judaic, whose legal issues here, is our AG. But we have Darren Floyd, who's the territory manager for Wells Fargo Equipment, and then Kevin Tillotson, who's the principal banking relationship person, and then Ann Metcalf is here, and then I think on the phone John Self and Mark Sklowski, and I'm sorry if I butchered that. So a lot of representation by the borrower and the banking firm. So I saw earlier people were listing this, so I'll just try to summarize it, and then you could ask whatever in-depth questions you'd like of the bond council here. But in essence, as Ted said, this is a conduit bond program similar to exactly what we did a few months, I don't know, half a year ago or so for the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, just slightly smaller, be less than $8 million. And it's kind of into two bonds, partially because part of the money will be used for building, part of the money will be used for equipment, which have different amortization lives, and therefore that's kind of the answer to that. Funds basically pay for those things, building equipment and the transaction costs. And the application talked about, which is one of our matrix of why we do these things, is potentially around 20 construction jobs, and then with the new building and other stuff, somewhere around 8 to 10 new jobs. The resolution that is here kind of does four things. Gives the approval of the trust indenture, gives approval in essentially material, the final form. They're not done yet until the deal is done. But the trust indenture, the loan agreement, the contracts of purchase, and then essentially the form of the bonds themselves. And specifically to Ted's comment, and I know some other members here, but on page 4 of the resolution, it's very clear that the bond is not, and these are in the therefore sections of the resolution, the bond does not constitute indebtedness of any life or any other liability of the state, last, or political subdivision thereof, but shall payable solely from certain of the payments to be made by the borrower in the loan agreement, certain other sources identified in the indenture. The authority does not pledge the full faith and credit state of the last or any political subdivision thereof to the payments of the bonds, and the issuance of the bond does not directly or contingently allocate state of the last or any other political subdivision. So, there and the therefore, in what you're approving, is the language that says we truly are just a conduit and have no obligation. The rest of it just deals with formal approval of those documents I just mentioned, and I think that's really the high point. And I would take any questions, I think, if you have any.
Any more questions? What kind of what's the term and expected term of the bond, and what's the interest rate that the expected in this closed market?
It's my understanding that part of getting it done today is that the interest, the method of interest, will be finalized on the day of the close. So the market is going to drive the method that gets chosen. I would defer to the participants that are here to talk about the term of the two anticipated bonds, if you have any more to respond to the chair's question.
It would be nice to know when you do a conduit bond, what the market typically, what they expect, mm-hmm. what the expectation is, for, you know, so we kind of know it as a board, understand it when we're talking to future participants, maybe, and what the typical terms is. In general, a range, something. That's kind of, I'd like to get that kind of information out.
In some instances, and this is slightly different than the hospital, where you go out, and I think those were 20-year bonds, as I recall. Normally, 20-year tax-exempt bonds go to the market. This is a more of a structured deal that we're just being a conduit to use our tax-exempt basis for it. And I can get you those things afterwards, but Ken?
If I could just say a couple of things. Ken Vassar, bond counsel for ADA, and first of all, I want to make it very clear, when I say bond counsel for ADA, that means I'm ADA's lawyer, so I'm here on your behalf. The maturity, the agenda for today's meeting refers to two series of bonds. That's not to say that the board is approving two series and none other. There might be one series, there might be two series. As we continue the discussions of the documents, we will finalize things like that. But if there are two series, one series is expected to be financing equipment. And equipment financings, the general rule for tax-exempt bond financing is that the weighted average maturity of the bond cannot exceed the reasonably expected economic life of the financed project by more than 120%. Equipment financing typically has a reasonably expected life somewhere in the 5 to 7 year range. And so the outside maturity of that series of bonds could not be more than maybe 8 years or something like that. Real property financing in the form of the building aspect of this would be a separate, is expected to be a separate series, although it doesn't have to be. And a real property structure such as this warehouse would have a reasonably expected life closer to 40 years, but the typical financing term is never that long, and it would most likely be more along the lines of 20 years. I don't know whether the parties have finalized what they've agreed to for this financing, but that's the range that typically would apply.
I have a question. So when we receive these, there's a $500 application fee. How is that calculated? And is it the same fee for just one application, or
is built into the regulations, which are actually up next. So the application fee is just the application fee.
Okay.
And then the issuance fee is based upon the size of the issue itself, the size of the bond sale. And so, again, that's part of the next thing. So.
But it's still, in this one, projected to be approximately $37,500.
At the existing regulatory range, at an $8 million number, it was the issuance fee would be $37,500.
But it's always that flat fee based on the statute.
The $500, the application fee to get it and to do the initial analysis and look at it and move forward, yes.
So, can you give me
Mr. Chair, I'd just maybe ask Ken to talk about it. It was on page 3 of... It's in the bond documents, but they're floating in variable rates.
Right, they're variable rates. Yeah. Plus.
So, I mean, even the interest rate you'd be talking about up front may not be the interest rate over the life of the bond.
What are they tied to?
LIBOR. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, if I may, the documents permit a variety of interest rate modes. So one mode would be in the variable category. One mode, for example, would be a weekly rate mode. The way those kinds of variable rate bonds work is there's a remarketing agent. So each week, the remarketing agent has to determine where the market is for that kind of bond at that time, and then sets the interest rate as best the remarketing agent can, so that they can sell the bond on the, so that they could sell the bond if it was subject to being marketed at the rate at that time. So that's just a market-driven rate. There are also a couple of index rates in there. Those rates float based on what the applicable index is. There's a CIFMA index and there's a LIBOR index. And there's also various, and ultimately there's the option to convert the bond to a fixed rate. If that occurs, it will be converted at the time to wherever the market is for fixed rate bonds of that remaining maturity and that security. At closing for these, I think the expectation is that, although it's not definite, I think the expectation at this time is that they will go out in a variable rate mode, probably the weekly variable rate mode. But again, I'm sorry.
Hey, Ken?
Yeah.
Excuse me. I just want to say the indication at this stage, and this is John Self with Wells Fargo, is this would be based on a LIBOR-based index on a 30-day transaction. So that's the initial index, Ken, that we're envisioning. So it's a published index, not set by a remarketing agent, but set forth by whatever the rates are on a given date, first business day of the month, that then would be delivered according to the index set forth underneath the documents.
So, and if I can continue along those lines, an index rate structure doesn't depend on anybody making a particular judgment at any point in time. It allows the borrower to benefit from, or suffer as the case may be, from fluctuations in a particular index and where the interest rates in that index are from time to time. So John Self, who's with Wells Fargo, was just speaking. If they go out in a 30-day LIBOR, every 30 days the interest rate on the bonds will be adjusted to reflect where the LIBOR index is at that time.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Excuse me, Chair. At the time that they close, I will send a... Ken will send me the information and we will have that for the board.
All right. Go ahead and move it, please.
Chairman, I'll move resolution number G14-20, approving Series A and Series B conduit bonds for Master Beverage Group LLC.
Heard.
Greg,
yeah. Yes. We will look forward to seeing that.
In action. Brian, would you pull the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
In the interest of allowing Alaskan Brewing Company to continue to make great beer, world-class beer, of which all Alaska beer drinkers are proud, I vote a resounding cheers. I mean, yes.
Very well done.
Deputy Commissioner Kowalski.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell. Prost.
Prost.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, can I make a comment?
Just
so we know, Ada, going forward, there's some of these that we do. We talk about the job benefits. In particular, real property and things like the beverage industry may have local governments and potentially even state government revenue benefits. We don't often call those out in our documents what the benefits of ADA taking this action are. And it's something to consider in our future categorization of what the benefits of taking this action are. So in addition to good beer, we get benefits to the local community and potentially some state tax revenue too, which I'm always interested in. Yep.
It just makes us all smarter.
That's right.
Thank you, Michael. Next up is Resolution G1417. I'd actually like to go ahead and put this on the table first, then we'll do the discussion.
All right, Chairman, I'll move Resolution Number G14-17, adopting amended regulations relating to conduit and the bonds program.
Thank you. The second?
Second.
Thank you. Ted?
Yes, Chair. Appreciate that. During our strategic planning, we came into a review of our programs, and as the board was looking at this program, we've noticed and that we have not updated our regulations dealing with our conduit bonds, especially in the type of fees that we charge for the actual issuance that ADA receives, besides getting paid for all of their direct costs. So based on board direction, we did go out and do a review of what other development finance authorities charge, and in essence, the board was correct that we were out of date in what our fees were, so that we did go out to the public and do a proposed regulation that would update our fees to be more in line with other development finance authorities, and in essence, change that structure again to bring us more in alignment. And if, Chair, I could have Michael Lamb go over what we found and how we went through our regulations and changing the fee structure to correct that alignment in our fees.
Okay. Michael?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Board members, I think Ted did a pretty good job in his summation. Of course, this was brought up during the strategic plan work session and the fees, and we worked a lot with, especially actually Mike Cassie did a lot of work and going out to other finance development agencies. And what's true, which is in the letter memo in here, is boy, there's just apples and oranges and pears and kiwis and grapes and really different. And so the essence of what we have is to try to come up with across the board, irrespective of the ranges and stuff. For the five recent bonds that we've done, we did a calculation, we did a comparison. And the essence of all this is there's really proposing four different changes. And one is to change the structure going from four-tier to three-tier, change in the application fee from 500 to 1,000, change in the, if they amend the application from 200 to 500, and then change in the actual fees for the subject to volume cap and those not subject to volume cap. And I wanted to tell you that, and I will, somebody should take the blame, so I'll take it, but I found last night in rereading, it doesn't have a page number, but the first page in here is the memorandum, and then the next page is the extract for the actual regs and stuff. And on the second page at the very bottom, it talks about 3AC 99140A1. It talks about at the very bottom 0.91%, which is actually 90 basis points. And when you look at the attachment 1 and the attachment 2, which are green and blue, if you go back a couple pages, Chair.
Where are we?
You guys don't have this?
Which part?
Right there, the blue one, Crystal, right there.
Okay, there you go.
On the very, you don't have this page right here?
It's 1 and 2. That's the resolution.
Oh, okay.
No, this is the...
Right, we're talking
don't
about...
Don't you get up with the resolution?
I'll have you that resolution that you're talking about.
I have the resolution.
You have it right, Mike?
The green and the blue?
Yeah.
No, they're farther back to the left, and you'll see the red.
Right after the memo. Sure.
Okay.
The short of it.
Oh my God! He's trying to throw wingers at me. All organized.
Okay, sorry. So the short of it, when you look at this, the comparison on it, this for over $50 million is actually 9 basis points, which would be 0.09%, and the language that was in here was 90 hundredths, and so it should have been 9 hundredths. And so I want you to know that what we are proposing are the actual, you can see, it's easy for me to look at basis points on the green and on the blue. The distinction basically being that they're subject to volume cap or not subject to volume cap, and they're not subject to the volume cap if they are with a 501c3 type of an organization. So that really kind of gets to be the distinction. So, for example, the Memorial Hospital is a 501c3, not subject to the volume cap. But if it is not a nonprofit per the code, then you only get so much, and that's why we have to go to the state, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why there's two different rates here. So the essence of it, again, is, yes, we talked about it. Yes, we went out and did a very thorough analysis.
The conference.
Are essentially proposing somewhat lowering the very low end and actually raising the upper end. And you have the comparison based upon both types of conduit bond that would come before you and the rates. So the one other thing that I would ask the board is that it'd be probably easier, and wouldn't have had this error, if instead of using in the text itself to use the number of basis points versus some percentage of some portion of 1%, it just gets confusing. So
the information in the table is correct.
Yes, the information in the table is correct, and as I said, I read last night 90 should have been 9 one-hundredths, which is 9 basis points.
But, Mike, we have to make an amendment to do what you're saying.
I think you just interlineate and change the offending words to say 9 basis points.
Right.
And have the board approve that when they adopt the resolution.
Okay. So I'll need...
And you're good to go.
Perfect. So, apologies, didn't catch it, but it would have been actually wrong if we...
Okay, so you want to change it to 9 basis points. Is that correct?
Yes. 3AAC 99.140 subpart 2. The reference to 90 hundredths of 1% would be changed to 9 basis points.
Is there any objection to that?
Are you going to do that?
All right. All so it is right. It is amended.
Yeah. And then...
The resolution before us is amended.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, may I ask for one other friendly amendment? Would be where we use the term some portion of a percent to use the appropriate basis point language.
Mr.
Mr. Chair, I apologize.
Go ahead, Mike.
We have other business.
We could come back.
It would take 15 minutes to go rewrite this in the way I think they want it written. And I'd be more comfortable actually just reading the language rather than doing it here at the table when it involves numbers like that.
Somebody's got it.
Chair, we can do that.
Okay. I'm just asking the chair if you're okay with that. I'm okay going with it, but I'd want to see it.
Well, I pretty much understand the 9 basis points, and I understand that part. So the second part, I just find out. So what was the second part?
The second part, instead of talking about some percentage of 1%, just call it, instead of 0.0001%, you call it 40 basis points.
Jerry, are you all right with that?
I am all right with that. The regulations attorney in Juneau may have a different view of the matter, and if so, then we'd hear about it, and they'd make the necessary corrections. But I think the substance would be the same all the way through. Okay.
So why don't we go ahead and make those changes on the document, and then we'll table this for
and bring it back.
Okay.
At the end.
Paris?
Could I ask a question before
we table? Absolutely.
So Mike, I guess I'm coming at this from a little different angle. I guess I'm coming at it from a cost of service angle. So are we, on these tables here, are we losing money? Ada, is the agency losing money the way we're doing it today?
No, I don't believe so.
What are we trying to recoup here in order to increase what you could say is a user fee or as a tax? Why are we doing all this?
I think it would sound circular to say we're responding to a board request, but during the strategic work plan, the question was asked is how do our conduit fees that ADA charges to those that want to use our tax-exempt borrowing ability, which they benefit from, how do our fees compare? So we went out, and from everybody that we could that's like kind, got their fees and said, ours are actually way under, and so we adjusted them to bring it up. And so what is true is no different than the one that just got approved, if you will. I think it would be at 50 basis points. And so the fee for the one that just got approved was $37,500. If it ends up at $8 million. The new fee for that would be at 50 basis points, it would be $40,000. So there would be a $2,500 increase in the cost of that tax-exempt conduit financing to them. Now, the last time that these were modified, you know, just for time value money, it's been a long time, I suspect. So it is true the price has gone up, but I think what we have proposed and brought forth to the board is comparative to where rest of the nation is at as best as we could compare, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And so we were under. That was the request, and that is why we're bringing it forward to the board to go.
So to be clear in my mind, when someone asks to be a part of the conduit funding plan, the agency isn't losing money by facilitating that request. I mean, we're whole.
Yes.
Under the current system.
Yes. There is a cost to the agency in that, as you know, part of our audit every year, and part of the what gets looked at are those types of things. So there is an ongoing, there's an issue of disclosure, there's ongoing stuff. So we get paid one time up front an issuance fee to cover all, you know, our cost of doing and our time and stuff like that. And what's true, the borrower pays, for example, Mr. Bassler's time, the bond, you know. But there is still, there's my time, there's some Sherry's time, there is our staff's time, there's, you know, and then we do that until the life of the bond is over. So we're sort of getting paid a one-time fee to do all the reporting that's required. And I my presumption is we're not losing money if you factor everything in and doing it. We are charging what I would consider to be a reasonable fee for an entity to benefit from tax-exempt financing, which is less costly to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't come here. I mean, they're intelligent business people, and they find after paying our fees that it's worthwhile for them to still come through here and do it. And I don't think that this will change.
Join the conference.
Thank you.
Good. Oh, Chair, I think Michael just stated what I was going to say, is that, again, with conduit funds, as Michael said, that our direct fees are paid as part of the cost of issuance, and then we do get the issuance fee, and that issuance fee does pay our indirect costs, but it is also helping to support the program going forward, like Michael was saying, for paying for our monitoring of the conduit bonds when we have to, if there are any issues, if the conduit bond ever comes out of what's it called?
Default?
Default or potential default. So bringing our rates in line just, we believe, helps us to go forward in providing the support for this program.
Okay, so which is the board table until we bring back the appropriate. Do we have, is that everybody's, or do you want to go ahead and fire it up?
Mr. Chair, based on the second thing, I'm comfortable if board members want to go forward, if others would like to see it fully written.
Well, I'm comfortable with going forward, but is there...
Well, the simplest fix, it would be just to change 90 hundredths to 900.
That's totally fine. Anyway.
Crossing out two letters, TY, and then leaving it the rest of it the way it is. So if you want to do the other thing and change everything to basis points, you're going to have to go back and rejigger this a bit.
Why don't we hold off on the basis points and just change the 9?
And we could come back.
We've already approved that change.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
And if it's something the board desires, we can come back with another change to the regulation next meeting to go to that.
Okay. Any other discussion before the roll call? Greg?
Mr. Wilkins?
No.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski?
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Commissioner Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, board.
Next up is the presentation for the 49th Angel Fund. Chair?
Yes, Chair. Thank you for... the 49th State Angel Fund is currently a fund that is being ran by the municipality. It's what is called in the business an angel fund that provides funding
for
new startup businesses to move forward with what's called angel investors, investors that will provide capital and advice in helping a business move forward. This fund has been... ran by the municipality, and there has been a request for ADA to look at possibly managing the fund for the municipality. There have been no agreements, no final discussions. This is just something that has been brought up to ADA and to the Department of Commerce, DCCED. So we would like to give a very quick presentation on the fund and just get the feeling from the board if they want us to potentially move forward in discussions with the municipality. And so I would like, if it's up to the chair, it would be great to bring up John Bittner, Deputy Commissioner of DCCED, and then the Commissioner of Commerce is here also to give a very quick briefing on it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. John?
In 2011, the Department of Commerce actually applied for these funds. The U.S. Treasury had a program under the State Small Business Credit Initiative that we were eligible by a formula to get $13.2 million. Part of what we do, we talk about it a lot across our agencies, is to look at where we get that, what we can do to increase investment, and we don't want to remember to
including Commercial Development Finance Association, and National Association of Economic Development Practitioners, and others. But in this instance, while we were examining this, we also had a number of Alaskans ask us to consider programs like this. And part of what we were trying to do, we ended up submitting a state application. AIDA would have provided some matching funds for that $13.6 million. We look at ways that we can increase our ranking in things like high-tech jobs, patents, research and development, access to venture capital, business startups. So again, the abbreviated portion is just to say that we're constantly looking at what tools we can use, whether they're through data, through other programs, departments, commerce, other agencies. At the time we completed our application, it required a government signature. We had talked with the governor, Bankers Association, individual lenders, the University Center for Economic Development, FCA, financial consultants. We've embedded this, that we were encouraged by the federal government to do our application, but we weren't able to meet their statutory timeline. Session, weren't going to call special session anyway. What happened then after our 2011 application was that when the state stepped out as the applicant, then municipalities were eligible to apply. And so I just wanted, again, to give a preface of you know, some of the groundwork that was done. John, you used it to municipalities with the existing program?
Sure, absolutely. Basically, when the municipality of Anchorage decided to proceed with the application for the fund, they submitted the application to the SSBCI and ended up receiving a little over $13 million for the purposes of doing either direct or secondary investments. To date, they have obligated, I believe, $8.2 million of those dollars through multiple rounds of applications. Most of that money has been to what they call fund of funds. So there are currently four angel funds or investment funds that have been spun up through the Fortinet SAF through a one-to-one, generally, private sector match. There are about $2 million left remaining to be obligated, and the funds were pulled down in a series of tranches, usually about a little over $4 million per tranche. Each tranche came with it a certain amount set aside for operating costs. There is currently, I think, about a little over $100,000 left in the last tranche's operating funds, and the program manager that is running the fund, Joe Morrison, who's actually here in the audience, is transitioning from full-time position managing the fund to a part-time contractual position. The municipality of Anchorage did a search among the community to try to find whether or not there was an organization they could partner with to continue the program and maintain the standards that Joe's set without disrupting the ability of these four funds they've created and the one direct investment they've done into a business call doctor who still need to call for the funds that have been obligated to them as they proceed and find investments. There is about $800,000 worth of direct investments made either by the Fortinet SAF or through the funds directly into businesses so far. The anticipation, obviously, is that the full bulk of the $8 million that is out there will be obligated towards direct investments over time. The payout structure for this, and if you have questions about the financial structures, each fund is a different structure, as well as the direct investment. The payout timeline for those varies. We met with the chairman here a little while back, Mike Katze and I, to talk about sort of his initial thoughts on what we're looking into here, and several questions emerged regarding operating funding, clawback provisions, things of that nature. Subsequently, we've gotten feedback from the municipality, from Joe. They are estimating that the annual operating cost for this program would be about $185,000. That includes a full-time staff person, as well as I believe $30,000 for contractual and legal work for any further work that needs to be done directly with the funds, and some other provisions as well to just cover day-to-day expenses. Generally speaking, with angel funds, payout times on an investment can range from 5 to 7 to longer in terms of years. How much you get back depends on how the fund is structured, and details on that I'm sure Joe would be more than happy to share with you. What we wanted to do today was find out, before we proceed much further, if the board at large had other specific questions, concerns, points of clarification, we don't expect any action on this right now today, but we wanted to basically update you on what's been happening, where we are now, and get feedback on what concerns you would have and whether or not you want us to proceed.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Okay, the information in the package is how other similar organizations in other states affect you. It's how what they do in a similar manner. So we're just informational today.
Okay. Questions on the board?
Is this one a first blush on?
Yeah, this is first.
This is so far outside our scope that I have no interest in it. I think there's lots of other places that these folks can go to do these kinds of things, statewide, federal. This isn't data. And this is the first time I've been exposed to it. So this kind of thing scares me. So from perspective of ADA. So I'm not interested in pursuing it.
Russell? I think I told John earlier, I just had more just questions around it, because this is something that actually excites me, right? It's kind of something that gets away from a lot of the mind-numbing stuff that we do engage in. I think it's, and probably if you look at some of these economic development agencies, and I think we've talked about the one in Brazil and kind of what they've done and what they've evolved into, this is something that eventually could really fit with who we are and what we try to do within the state. And I think, you know, for me, it's just more around organization, how we handle it, who's accountable, do we have the necessary expertise in house to actually manage this? And I just want to see a little more info on that.
Sure. And I should clarify that the proposal that's being discussed between the municipality and Mike with ADA isn't to take control of the fund. It's actually a program management provision where we would enter into a two-year contract with the municipality to basically manage the dot the I's and cross the T's to make sure that the fund structure is maintained and to keep it moving forward. The advisory board that they currently have, or some form of that, whether they all decide to carry on or whether they have to repopulate it, would be responsible, as well as the Muni, if they wanted to obligate those last remaining funds. But they would not have that. Mike has spoken with Department of Law and with others, and the structure that he's tentatively proposing has multiple firewalls to protect data. I mean, this would actually mainly, at this stage in the conversation, be a contractual relationship to handle program management and would not obligate ADA to do beyond that at this stage.
So,
we've left the conference.
So when you talk about a contract program, does ADA get reimbursed?
Right. Now, under the current proposed structure, there's two things that we've been talking about. After we spoke with you, we would discuss with the municipality the option of a 50-50 cost share on the operational costs. They're open to that. They would have to get that approved by the assembly once we are a little farther down the negotiation path. But that would be a 50-50 split. The $100,000 and change that's left in the operation funds would be used to pay down the total operating costs, and whatever was left after that would be split 50-50 between ADA and the Muni if the Assembly agrees and if ADA decides they want to participate. At the end of this, any monies that get paid back through these funds, ADA, and if we split with the Muni the costs, would get paid out first. Whatever that ends up being at the time of repayment. Beyond that, whatever is left, ADA would then, again, under the tentative structure that we're still working on, would get 20% of whatever remains after the operations are paid back. So if they end up obligating $10 million overall, and the operating costs for 7 years or so would be about $1 million. So ADA would get their half of that $1 million back, and then 20% of the $9 million that remains.
Go ahead, Mike.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to respectfully disagree with my friend from Fairfax over here. And I'd say the reason I would is not the end of whether this fits. It's that I want to know more about it. And the reason I say that is whether it's actually closer to ADA or whether it's closer to the Emerging Energy Technology Fund that we have at AEA, there's a lot going on around ADA and AEA. And I look forward to the challenges that an administration and a legislature are going to be dealing with over the next couple of years. And I think there will continue to be the type of rethinking around programs and agencies as in the strategic plan. So to keep that piece out of a conversation, I'd be uncomfortable with at this point. Not to say I'd support actually anything happening in the long term yet, but I'd like to keep looking at it, but I'd expand it beyond just ADA and look at the opportunity more broadly within the group we have here.
I was just going to say, for board feedback, I'm interested in having more information about that to the board. And I think that, again, looking at some of the things that, when I speak, whether it's in state or I'm traveling out of state, when we look at what we're doing to, not only in the financing world, but just in terms of stimulating innovation, the Emerging Energy Technology Fund is one of the few things that we point to. We've got a few things to say, but our suite of tools around that, I think, is limited. And we think about all of the resources, whether it's fisheries, forest products, our petroleum, there's a lot of problems that we can still solve at the last 10 years. Anyway, so I'm adding to that, let's learn more. And also, as you're aware, my intentions have been to not only transition John Moore into more regular being your primary representative from Commerce, but also given his recent position at AEDC in proximity and anchors to work with the municipality and ADA. Ask him to do the footwork on this.
So
he was better
equipped.
Yeah, I would. I'm very aligned with where Russell is in his statement, as well as Mr. Bell and Michael. I think that this is enhances our already existing toolbox. It allows all the smaller communities of which I'm a part of to engage in the state and ideas that we have, and not keeping just those resources where the population is. And so I think this is good for small business. I think we need to support these startups. This is what makes our payroll. This is what sets us on to the global market. So I would be in support of getting more information.
Well, John, I appreciate the deal. As you know, when we met, I had a whole bunch of concerns that right out of the box, the first term, they've committed the funds to other funds, but those funds really haven't been invested yet, and how long it's going to take them to invest. Meanwhile, the operating costs go on and on and on, and then what's the minimum expectations and whatnot. Those are the details, kind of the devils in the details that I'd like to see. My comment is I'm kind of neutral and go either way until I see more about it and I can feel comfortable about it. I look forward to more information. That's my personal opinion. And so I do look to see the additional information and what the structure is, and then how it would fit, if at all, within our organization. We may have to think a little bit out of the box to get to the finish line on something that makes sense for everybody. But I appreciate the updates you gave me or the initial deal earlier this week and then coming forward to us. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, just to close that out if I can, I just want to be sure they heard that we also should be talking with AEA in pursuing this direction as well.
Yes, AEA should be right in the loop.
Good. Thanks.
All right, so that's the presentation on for E, 49 State Angel Fund. Next up is our IEP. 115 is imminent, but before we go into the IEP presentation, it's going to be a long one, or?
Yes, sure. It is, Chair.
So, does anybody want a quick break?
Yeah.
Why don't we be back at 1:30? That's 10 minutes.